please.
Okay, so this evening I want to acquaint you with a Bible character on our way to teaching some stuff. And then we're going to close with some points. And if we have time, we're going to close with a song. I'm hoping to eventually get such great control over my time that, first of all, be a good example for Frankie and Andy and Juan. And then secondly, that we can actually close with a song for once like I planned. But here, we're going to look at some things that I think are just fantastic. My desire is I'm going to give you four takeaways. Here's the first takeaway right up front. The book of Revelation uses almost no new material. You're now 25% done with the sermon. All right? 1 Kings chapter number 18 and verse number 1. I want you to read that with me. Follow along. It came to pass after many days that the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year, saying, go present yourself to Ahab and I will send rain on the earth. Now, if you're looking at that passage right there, it looks like God is doing what? Now, if you're not familiar with Elijah, it's okay. You're going to get kind of a 30,000 foot view tonight. And we'll be back some year if the Lord tarries, and we'll see what happens. But for now, become acquainted with this Elijah character. He looks like he's involved with something. What does it look like he's involved with? A drought. Yeah, that's right. And what? How long do you think it is? Yeah, it looks like it's about 3 years. So we're going to put in here 3+ years, all right? And we're going to put here, we're going to put Kings, and I'm going to populate this little. Now, when I put a 1 and 18:1, that means 1 Kings 18:1. So that's the first thing, is that there's a drought for about 3 years. We're going to get a little more specific here in just a moment. And you're going to notice in chapter number 18, there's this contest on Mount Carmel. And you're going to notice that there is a 450 prophets of, in verse 19, 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table. And they come and they have a competition, right? At an altar. Have you heard the story? You should, because I preached on it in February of 2017. I don't expect all of you to remember that. And what's that? Okay, yes, I know that some of you aren't here, and I appreciate that, and so probably I'll cover it again when we get to 1 Kings. So you're going to probably, I don't know if you noticed, but 850 prophets, pagan prophets, join him at an altar on Mount Carmel, and you know how this works. They dance around the altar, the pagans do, acting like a bunch of fools, and then at the end of this passage, notice verse number 38, you have Elijah, he's done praying, and in verse 38, the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt sacrifice and the wood and the stones and the dust, and it licked up the water that was in the trench. So over here, we're going to put 1 Kings 18:38. We have fire falling fire. And it happened, according to verse 36 and 37, in answer to the prayer from Elijah. 63 words, I think, in the Hebrew. And if memory serves, a prayer, or maybe it's 63 words in the English, which is much different. In Hebrew, it's probably 7. Right, Andy? So it's crazy. And so he prays, the fire falls, and then you're going to notice in 1 Kings 18:38, the fire falls and licks up the wet sacrifice. It's a great story. You should read it to your children sometime around supper or maybe bed. At our house, we have family devotions at 9 p.m. I don't know what time you do it, but it's a great time to get in the habit of that so that your kids know how important it is to read the Bible. All right, so 1 Kings 18:38. Now we're going to notice in 1 Kings chapter number 19. Look at 1 Kings chapter number 19. And I want you to notice, please, verse number 12. After this earthquake, a fire, let's see, 1 Kings chapter 19. One moment, please. Ah, yes. Okay, forgive me. I meant 19:18. So, you know, I don't know if you've heard this story before, but there is a story here in 1 Kings 19:18 where basically Elijah declares that there are only 7,000 that have, or rather that he is the only one that fears God. And God retorts in verse number 38, in verse 18 of 1 Kings 19, I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed them. Now, what is he doing out here having this pity party? Well, notice chapter 19, verse 1. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done. Now, in case you're not aware, other than... Oh, I almost got myself in trouble. There are some politician couples of the recent 30 years, we'll say, that you could say are the equivalent to Ahab and Jezebel. And we'll say maybe back 30-ish years. And Jezebel is considered quite the floozy. And you're going to find out that she may have been... moving forward in our passage, she loved to, we're going to find out later in 2 Kings that she loved to paint herself and to show, and that was not a sign of virtue back in the day, friends. It says that she painted herself when she was found later on in the passage. Look at, please, now, 2 Kings chapter number 1. I want us to notice a few things. What I want to do is just to continue to be the guy in your life, or at least one of them, that champions an understanding of two things. One, that the Bible is one unfolding story, and two, there's probably nothing in the New Testament that it's not written without some Old Testament passage behind it. Things that you read and you're like, that's odd. Why is that in there? I want you to know it's all planned. 2 Kings chapter number 1, and you're going to notice in verse number 10. This king, we're going to call him King Ahaziah in verse number 2, fell through the lattice of his upper room in Samaria and he was injured. And so what does he do? He goes and sends people to Elijah. And you're going to notice in verse number 8, they answered him, a hairy man wearing a leather belt around his waist. And he said, oh, it's Elijah the Tishbite. Who did you encounter? Oh, this hairy dude with a really broad belt. It's got to be Elijah. How would you like to be known as that guy? In fact, I didn't plan this, but that's two hairy dudes in the Bible that are known for being hairy. Wow. That's when you cover your shoulders, right? I remember. All right. So verse number, man, so close so many times this evening. Verse 9, then the king sent to him a captain of 50 with his mighty men. So he went up to him and there he was sitting on the top of the hill and he spoke to him, man of God, the king has said, come down. And Elijah answered and said to the captain of 50, if I'm a man of God, let fire come down from heaven and consume you and your 50 men. So Elijah has this thing for calling fire from heaven. And here it is again, and he kills 50 of them. And then you'll notice in verse 11, he sent to him another captain of 50 and his 50 men, and he answered and said, man of God, thus has the king said, come down quickly. So Elijah answered and said to them, if I'm a man of God, let fire come down from heaven and consume you and your 50. And fire, God, came down from heaven and consumed the 50. In verse 13, basically, I mean, look at, he sent a third captain of 50. So this king has got to be on medicine because he's not picking it up. And you notice the second line, the third captain of 50 went up and came and fell on his knees before Elijah and pleaded with him and said to him, man of God, please let my life and the life of these 50 servants of yours be precious. Look, fire has come down from heaven and burned up the first two captains of 50s in their 50s, but let my life now be precious. And basically he's spared. So this is a guy that has done his homework and realizes that he is going to be a crisp if he doesn't get some favor from this guy, Elijah. So fire goes out, fire consumes from Elijah. Okay. So what I'm trying to get you to do is first, and maybe a third objective in this first part of our lesson, is to build your appetite to know these Old Testament stories. They are not only true, they're entertaining. All right. So now I want you to look, please, at 2 Kings chapter number 9. Go, please, to 2 Kings chapter number 9. Under normal circumstances, in normal weeks, I build a slide so that we don't have to do this, but this is okay. This is okay. So 2 Kings chapter number 9, I want you to notice verse number 27, 2 Kings 9:27. I want you to notice something just geographically. Okay, I need to write and then speak. 9:27, and we'll go to 31. Notice how it goes here. Ahaziah, king of Judah, saw this and fled by the road to Hagan. What did he see? Well, Jehu pursued and actually shot his brother-in-law, and who was the king of Israel. When verse 27, when Ahaziah, king of Judah, saw this, he fled by the road to Beth Hagan. So Jehu pursued him and said, shoot him also in the chariot. And they shot him at the ascent of Gur, which is by Ibleam. Then he fled to Megiddo and died there. Now, what I want you to see is his servants carried him in the chariot of Jerusalem and buried him in the tomb of his fathers in the city of David in the 11th year of Joram, the son of Ahab. I know, Andy, it's killing me too. Ahaziah had become king over Judah. Now, when Jehu had come to Jezreel, Jezebel heard of it, and she put paint on her eyes and adorned her head and looked through the window. Then as Jehu entered the gate, she said, is it peace, Zimri, murderer of your master? And he looked up at the window and said, who is on my side? Who? So two or three eunuchs looked out at him. So I want you to see Megiddo being involved with this story. That is a city, and it's not far from Jezreel, okay? Megiddo and Jezreel. Now, Megiddo is where one of the kings was just put to death by Jehu, and now you can see here that he finds Jezebel in Jezreel in verse 30. Notice what it says in verse 32. He looked up at the window and said, who's on my side? Who? So two or three eunuchs looked out at him. Now, there's a hint that Jezebel can't be trusted. And he said, throw her down. So they threw her down, and some of her blood spattered on the wall and horses. Blood on horses. Now, I hope that you're seeing what I'm getting at here. I hope that you're seeing that things that you are now having flashed to your mind from a book in the Bible called Revelation are starting to make some sense here. Let's go forward to the book of Malachi. Look at the last book of the Old Testament, Malachi. Or maybe he's Italian, it's Malachi, I'm not sure, but I think it's Malachi. What'd you say? Is it Polish? Are we allowed to make those jokes? Malachiowski? I'm not sure. So, Malachi chapter number 4, with a very German name like Sturm, it seems like everything is fair game. Malachi chapter number 4, you're going to notice here that we have promise of a son of righteousness in verse 2. To you who fear my name, the son of righteousness shall arise with healing in his wings. Now I want you to notice in verse number 5, Malachi 4, 5. Behold, I send you Elijah the prophet before the coming and great and dreadful day of God. Dreadful day of the Lord. Okay, did you see that? So we're expecting Malachi, we're expecting Elijah to come before the Lord comes. Malachi 4, 5, a sighting of Elijah. You'll see how this plays in a moment. Next, please go to the book of James. Look at the book of James. Now, that's in the New Testament, friends. In case you're new with us tonight, the book of James, chapter number 5. James 5, that's page 1485 if you need it. James 5, and we're going to be looking at verses 16 and 17 and 18. James 5. Confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. And then he's going to give you an example of one. Here we go. Elijah was a man with a nature like ours. Hey, isn't that comforting? And he prayed earnestly that it would not rain. And it did not rain on the land for 3 years and 6 months. So now we have a New Testament author telling us how long the drought was. How long was the drought? 3.5 years. 3.5 years. That is the first time you find 3.5 years in the Bible is in the story of Elijah. That's interesting. Maybe now that you see these things taking shape in the Bible preceding the book of Revelation, now let's go to Revelation chapter 2. Revelation chapter number 2. And let's see if this Elijah Jezebel saga is on the mind of John. Okay. Revelation chapter number 2 and verse number 20. All I'm trying to do here is put seed in your ground that John has this background he's working off of. That there's no, point number one, no new, aren't you glad all 4 points are not this long? That there's no new material in the book of Revelation. Look at verse number 20, Revelation 2. I have a few things against you. Now, who's he talking to? He's talking to one of the seven churches, the one in Thyatira in verse 18, verse 20. I have a few things against you because you allow that woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophetess, to teach and seduce my servants to commit sexual immorality and eat things sacrificed to idols. So right there, you can see Jezebel and Elijah are on the mind of the writer. I am not saying that he's not inspired by the Holy Spirit. I am saying we have this weird mingling of the background of the writer and the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. Okay? And that we believe Scripture was inspired using the intricacies of the author. Okay? All right. So hopefully, and we're going to put this here as kind of a guiding verse for this whole thought. All right. Let me pause here. We can take one question right now. Does anyone have one? Yes, Andy.
For this passage in particular, would it be better to say it's on the mind of Jesus? Because is he dictating?
Sure. Yes. Well said. Andy makes a good clarification. You can see the words are written in red. So these are the words of Jesus given to John to write down. And so certainly at this point, it is obviously the words of Jesus. I like it. And it makes it even more authoritative that on John the author and on Jesus the revelator, which is really kind of a twist on the author, is on the name of the book. Because in the first several verses of the book, it's the revelation of Jesus Christ. Great clarification. Thank you for that. All right, so now let's look at chapter number 11. This is really going to start hopping real good for you here. Chapter number 11. And let's take a look at what's taking place in chapter number 11. And we'll wrap this up and give a couple takeaways. Revelation chapter number 11. Look at verse number... gracious. We'll go with verse 3. I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth. Now, if you're not sure what that means, a Jewish prophetic year is 360 days, and taking that 3.5 times is 1,260. So you have 3.5 years here found for the first time in the book of Revelation. Say, why does that matter? Well, in popular prophecy talk, it matters because this is half of a 7-year tribulation. But I just wanted you to see for the first time, and by the way, it's used in verse 2 as well. It's just in terms of months. 7 years times 12 months is 84 months. Half of that is 42, so that's 3.5 years at the end of verse 2. The point I want you to see here is that you have 3.5 years, and I want you to notice what one of these two witnesses does. You're going to notice in verse 4, these are the two olive trees. Pastor John spoke on that about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago. And you're going to notice in verse 6, these have power to shut heaven so that no rain falls on the days of their prophecy. So 11, 3 through 6 has the idea of one of these witnesses or both of these witnesses being able to cause a drought for 3.5 years. And let's see, where else can we look? Let's take a look also in this chapter at verse number, they're put to death. At the end of the 3.5 years, they're put to death. You're going to notice verse 5. Fire can come out of them to devour their enemies. Notice that? That sounds a lot like 2 Kings 1, doesn't it? It should. So we're going to put that. What verse is that? Is verse 5? Okay. So in Revelation, fire falling down from out there to their enemies, it's verse 5. Yep. So they're devouring, these witnesses in Revelation 11, 5 are devouring their enemies with fire, right? So they're put to death in verse 7 of Revelation 11. Their bodies are allowed to lay in the street. And then you can see in verse 10, there's a big party over it. And then in verse 11, after 3.5 days, the breath of God from God enters them, and they stood on their feet, and great fear fell on those who saw them. Now, this is interesting. Notice in verse 13, in the same hour, there was a great earthquake, and a tenth of the city fell. And look here, in the earthquake, 7,000 people were killed. Now, you're like, well, those are not the same. Well, they're not the same if you're looking for an exact match, but if you're looking for correlation, then they're great. Why did he pick 7,000 in Revelation 11? Probably because of this guiding principle here of what's on his mind. 7,000 have not bowed the knee to Baal. 7,000 die because they have bowed the knee to Baal. Just an example there. All right, let's take a look at chapter 13. Chapter number 13. And I want you to notice how this begins in verse number 1. You have this beast, chapter 13 of Revelation, verse 1. You have this beast coming out of the sea, and we would call him the Antichrist. John does not call him the Antichrist. He calls him the beast. Notice in verse number 3, it looks like he's assassinated and then maybe brought back to life. So maybe a false resurrection. That's why we might call him a false Christ, a pseudo Christ, an antichrist. They worship him, 13:4 says, the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worship the beast, saying, who's like the beast? And then notice in verse number 11, here comes another beast coming up out of the earth. And he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. Notice in verse 13, he performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth. Now, what does that sound like, friends? Yeah, it sounds like falling fire. That's right. Sounds like falling fire. So it makes good sense that if you have a promise of a coming Elijah, it makes sense that if you have a false Christ and you have a promise from the Old Testament that Elijah's going to come before Christ comes, it makes sense that you would have a false Elijah before the false Christ. And you'll notice that this beast, in verse number 12, exercises all authority of the first beast and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast. So you have two beasts in this passage. One we call the Antichrist, and the other one who's kind of a prophet who points everyone to the first beast to worship him. Kind of a false John the Baptist. Or in Malachi language, a false Elijah. He's even able to call down fire from heaven. Okay? Now we're moving forward now. Let's take a look at chapter number 14 and verse number 20. Revelation 14, verse 20. Now, the wine press. Now, what are we talking about here? Let's take a look at verse number 18. Another angel come out from the altar, had a sharp sickle. Verse 19, the angel thrust in the sickle, end of the verse, threw it into the great winepress of the wrath of God. So he takes all the unsaved and like grapes, flings them into a winepress. Verse 20, the winepress was trampled outside the city. Look at here. The blood came out of the winepress. Why did Jesus use this language? Why did John write it? Up to the horse's bridles. Now, I suppose that you can get carried away on how deep the river of blood is flowing, unless that's not the author's intent. We're being told the author's intent is to give you the end time scenario with the backdrop of Elijah and Jezebel. So nothing is on accident here. And then take a look at chapter number 16. More information about the Battle of Armageddon. Notice chapter 16, verse 12. The sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river Euphrates, and its water was dried up, so that the way of the kings from the east might be prepared. There's a lot we could talk about there, isn't there? And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs coming out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. So that's what that second beast is called there. End of verse 13 calls him what? A false prophet. Thank you. So he is a false Elijah, and he's even called in the book a false prophet right here. All right. So notice verse 15, I'm coming as a thief. Why is he saying that? That's interesting. Who's he talking to there? That's interesting. There must be some Christians on the earth. Behold, I'm coming as a thief. Blessed is he who watches and keeps his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame. Look at verse 16. And they gathered them together to a place called in Hebrew Armageddon, which is built off of this word, Megiddo. Armageddon. Revelation 16, 16. All right. Let's answer a question. What in the world does this have to do with this morning? All right. I'm glad you asked. Take a look at this very same chapter, Revelation 16, and notice chapter 14. Look really deep in chapter 16 and forget about it. Go back to chapter 14. All right. Notice verse number 9. A third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast and his image and receives his mark on his forehead or on his hand, he himself shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out full strength into the cup of his indignation. He'll be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And here's that language borrowed from Isaiah 34 from this morning. And the smoke of their torment ascends forever and ever. And they have no rest day or night who worship the beast and his image, whoever receives the mark of his name. Smoke should indicate fire. We find out in verse 10, they are tormented in fire. When do those beaten at Armageddon, when do they get put into the fire? Look at chapter 19 of Revelation. This is answering the question, what does this have to do with this morning's passage and the Edomites and every other nation that does not fear God? Psalm 9, verse 17, the Lord will turn all the wicked into hell and all the nations that forget God. So Revelation 19, verses 11 through 21, is Armageddon taking place. It's forecasted in 14, forecasted in 16, and it is here in chapter 19. Chronicled, there we are. And you're going to notice in verse number 20, the beast was captured and with him the false prophet who worked signs in his presence by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worship his image. These two were cast alive into the lake of fire burning with brimstone. The rest were killed with a sword, which proceeds from the mouth of him who sat on the horse. Now, notice the rest. Go with me to chapter 20. You want to remember the word the rest at the beginning of Revelation 19:21. Look at chapter 20 now and verse number 4. I saw thrones and they sat on them and judgment was committed to them. I saw souls of those who had been beheaded for their witness to Jesus. Look at the end of the verse. They lived and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years, but the rest of the dead did not live again until the 1,000 years were finished. So I think context requires that we take that the rest right across the chapter break and connect it with 19:21. These are the people who died in the battle with God, and they're not going to live again until the end of the 1,000 years. And then you'll notice in verse 7, when the 1,000 years have expired, Satan will be loosed from his prison. Notice verse 10, the devil who deceived them after this 1,000 years is cast into a lake of fire and brimstone where the beast and the false prophet are. So they're still there 1,000 years later. The beast and the false prophet are still there 1,000 years later. And then the rest who wouldn't live again till the end of the 1,000 years, according to verse 5, in verse number 11 of chapter 20, they're brought again from hell. Look at verse 13. The sea gave up the dead who were in it, and death and hell, or Hades, delivered up the dead which were in them. This is, if you're getting real specific from this morning, this is Edom, but it's all nations that forget God, all nations that gather at Armageddon. And they've been dead for 1,000 years in hell, and now they're being brought up out of it and judged, verse 13, according to their works out of books. Verse 14, the place they just came from called hell or Hades is cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And anyone not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. And it is that fire that chapter 14, verses 9 through 11 fits into, where people who take the mark of the beast will burn and the smoke of their torment will arise forever before the Lamb. That's the connection with this morning. I've already given you point number one. Revelation uses almost no new stuff. Point number two, Revelation is a book of signs and therefore teaches theology a long time before it foretells the future. Let me say that again. I'm not saying it doesn't foretell the future. That's probably redundant. I'm not saying it doesn't tell the future. I am saying that it has a goal far better than that, and that is to teach theology. What are two points of theology at least? Point three. We should always be looking out for Jezebel in every age until the Lord's return. I think that is a major point of theology that John is teaching here with the help of Jesus, is that in every age until the Lord's return, we should expect there to be a spirit of Jezebel trying to get God's servants to trip up and fornicate with other allegiances. Number four, point number four, the second point of theology that I think that John is trying to teach here is that until the time when the Lord returns, we should expect the spirit of Elijah to arise within some of God's servants until the Lord returns. I am not saying there won't be two witnesses. I am not saying there won't be 7,000 who literally die in Jerusalem. I am saying before we're being told how the future goes, we're being taught theology by Jesus out of the Old Testament. So we're taking our Revelation glasses and rereading 1 Kings and 2 Kings. Do you see that? So, a little nugget takeaway. Every time you read 1 and 2 Kings now, you and I should be exercised to be thinking about what is this telling me about the future. So there are several levels of understanding the Word of God, and we're better for knowing them all. And I have given up on knowing them all. And that is why we worship, isn't it?
Amen.
87 years old, 86 years old, still loving the Bible because you know you don't know it all. We don't worship a God that we completely understand. And that is why we need to allow there to be some mystery in the God that we serve and worship. And even be happy that there are some parts of the scripture we don't get just yet. That's all I've got. Is there one question before we go? Denny.
Should we adopt that as Christians expect to see a man that comes on the earth that casts down fire from heaven that precedes the Antichrist? And should we, should that be an alarm to us that the Antichrist coming is?
Man, what a great question. I will tell you, and the question for those who didn't hear Denny, should we expect a literal man called, or literally calling fire down from heaven and earning credibility, thereby getting credibility for the Antichrist? If I didn't have Revelation 1:3 that told me the entire book is a book full of signs, my answer would be yes. If I didn't have a clear-cut theological paradigm here where Jesus says, I want you to be thinking about this for the rest of the book as I tell you the things that are and the things which were and the things which shall be, then I realize that today's church in 2023, even if we're not in the tribulation period, and I don't think we are, even if we're not, what we've learned tonight is that there's tons of theology and help for the Christian by understanding the Old Testament backdrop behind Revelation. Having said that, despite the fact that Revelation is a book of signs, it says so. Chapter 1, verse 3. He says, hey, this is what the book's about. It's a book full of symbols and signs. I don't immediately go into it and say, never mind that. I'm going to take everything literally. He told us it's a book of signs. And then knowing that he gave us an entire backdrop, and this is just one of them. It's just the one I've most recently discovered. I'm sure there are many things I have not included here that can be found. If I didn't have both of those, I'd say, yes, expect everything to occur literally. So here's what I'm looking for, Denny. I am looking for a spirit of Elijah, a false Elijah, to arise within a person who is very charismatic, and can it meet, at least make it look like he's performing miracles? And the reason I say that is the Jews as a nation, according to Daniel chapter 9 and verse 20. Can I take another 2 minutes? This side's not sure. Chip's okay with it. We got some. No? Okay. I'm going to take 2 minutes. Just bear with me, okay? I know that we've got other things calling. But listen, Daniel 9 verse 24 says that there will be a prince who is coming that will settle a covenant with the Jewish nation. That means there has to be something about that person that appeals to the Jews. And we're told in 1 Corinthians 1:22 that the Jews require miracles. That is why the Lord gave Moses 2 miracles to do. And frankly, that is why the Lord gave Jesus the ability to do all manner of miracles, because he was sent to his own and his own did not receive him, John 1:10. Why didn't he come pontificating philosophy? The Bible answers, because he wasn't sent to the Greeks. He was sent to the Jews, and so he came a miracle worker. So it makes fabulous sense that the person coming that must dupe the Jewish nation into a 7-year peace treaty is really good at miracles. So the substance of your question is, yes, we should look at someone who's really good at pulling off the miraculous. But the lesson tonight taught, I think, that what those miracles represent as a supernatural ability to do so is really the take home. Will that man really call down fire from heaven? How about this? He'll do something of that magnitude. But man, I wish you folks knew something about Project Bluebeam, or just some of you have been reading about this and you realize that this is a demonic world of VR, virtual reality and AI. I just want you to know there will be false raptures and false resurrections and false Babylons and false temples built all within the virtual reality world. So if it were possible, it would deceive the very elect. Matthew 24. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Yes. One day I'm just going to take off with that for about 20 minutes, but we're out of time.